Hello and welcome to Era on Air, the official podcast of Era, the Australian Institute of Refrigeration, Air Conditioning, and Heating. I'm your host, Mark Spencer, and today is part two of a three-part series. In June, in the basement of Melbourne's Treasury Building, there took place an event called Melbourne Forum, where some of the leading figures and brightest minds in sustainability in the built environment gather. In the first episode, we brought you a talk from Dr. Nicola Willand, a professor at RMIT University. And if you missed that, I highly recommend you go check it out after this. But today we have a talk for you from Kerry Connors from Energy Consumers Australia.
The next speaker we have is Kerry Connors from Energy Consumers Australia. Kerry will outline the research by Energy Consumers Australia Power Shift Program that underlines the link between energy and household health and enabling social and economic inclusion. She will explain how PowerShift's tool assists the industry and government in providing better assistance to consumers to help them manage their energy bills and usage. Kerry has been with Energy Consumers Australia since its inception, building on extensive experience with energy consumer issues, and has managed her own consultancy business, strengthening relationship between the private and community sectors. Please welcome Kerry.
Thank you very much to the Melbourne Forum for inviting us to present the research that we've been doing under the PowerShift banner. I thought I'd just cover quickly the following, which is an indication of what customers are experiencing in the market now, particularly customers who are struggling to pay their bills. Key findings of PowerShift, which is the research project that I've been working on over the last 3 years and which is just about to wrap up. It's very exciting. And finally, how we're encouraging government and industry to build those research findings into their programs and products. So I won't talk to this in detail, and Nikki has actually covered a lot of this ground. Thank you very much, Nikki. So electricity prices have risen dramatically over the last decade and completely out of step with CPI and wage increases. Nearly half of Australian households sometimes or always struggle to pay their bills, and there's a significant number of people who are telling us that they're in significant financial stress who aren't getting really much help at all. Low-income households are hit particularly hard, despite the fact that they actually tend to use less energy. And of that lowest 20%, the main income source for around 65% of those households is social security like pensions. We poll households twice a year to understand their experience in this market. And we've just published the most recent one. And I just thought I'd share with you two findings that we continue to be concerned about since we got some pretty ugly figures from the very first one, which is that only a third of customers have confidence that this market is working in their interests, and that while people tell us they're confident in their own ability to manage their costs, they can't access effective information or tools to help them. This is also a market that's in the process of transformation, which is driven by climate change and the potential offered by new technology. I just thought this is a neat indication of how that technology is changing the way we think about energy use in our homes. We're mostly at the moment between level zero and level one, so we have access to data about our use, sometimes in real time. As devices connect and talk to each other, there's the potential for us to receive better, more personal feedback to help us manage our usage or to enter into a deal where we just set and forget. Underneath this, customers are being asked to think about energy use in new ways. We're being asked to monitor at different times. We're being asked to understand the impact of individual appliances. And we're being asked to enter into energy deals that might offer us incentives to use less at certain times, but might also whack us with penalties if we don't. This is a slide. This is from the Low Income Energy Efficiency Program. It's the temperature and energy use of a household in Hobart in midwinter. That peak was when we think they got visitors to come in on that day. The rest of the time they're sitting in between a house in a lounge room that's the same temperature as outside. So the work we've undertaken over the past 3 years has led us to think about customers in a different way. Project PowerShift, which is funded through a Commonwealth grant, aims to help industry and government develop services and programs to help customers manage their energy use. So we sort of start from the premise that power needs to be in the hands of consumers so they can take control over their energy costs through their own actions. We have a focus on vulnerable consumers, but we've also tried hard to identify where there are research findings that are relevant to residential households more broadly. We began with the evidence base that was built through the Low Income Energy Efficiency Program, or LEAP. LEAP was a substantial trial. Commonwealth provided grants totalling $56 million to 20 consortia who trialled 44 different initiatives, as well as a range of communications channels to encourage low-income households to use energy more efficiently. They recorded data on nearly 20,000 participants, although it's estimated that the program reached over 30,000 people, so it's a substantial evidence base. The meta-analysis that was done by the Group of Energy Efficiency Researchers Australia told us which of those interventions were most effective in saving energy. That's really important as it provides good hard data to help support the business case for government and industry doing more. But just as valuable, that analysis also gave us a range of insights into how consumers thought and responded, which for the most part was actually pretty new ground in this sector. So from that research, we have synthesised the findings into four key messages. First, there is no one-size-fits-all solution. Households operate in diverse ways. Consumers can have limited ability to engage with the energy market. Physical disability, literacy, language and cultural differences all affect a customer's ability to use or respond to different types of information. Households have different constraints and opportunities depending on the decision they're faced with. Tenants can switch to a better deal. They can't put solar panels on the roof or install insulation. And the account holder may not be the primary decision maker in relation to energy. So telling that account holder in their bill that it's important to save energy doesn't actually give them the tools they might need to help change the behaviour of their children. The most effective LEAP initiatives were where information was tailored to the customer's circumstances and needs. So for elderly customers, that meant approaching them through trusted networks, providing information in digestible amounts and face-to-face wherever you could. For newly arrived migrants who had not as much experience of energy delivered through a market, they required more information and education about how to engage in the market and how their usage was tied to their bills. Families with young children like communications through digital channels so they could get help at a time that was convenient to them. Consumers are ready to respond when they are given effective information and tools. The Energy Consumer Sentiment Survey, people tell us in that they are reacting to price increases. They are actually responding. They're changing the temperature settings on their appliances. They're switching them off when they're not in use. They're switching to off-peak times, but they're not necessarily seeing an impact on their bill, and they're not necessarily confident that that's the right decision that they should be making. Which sort of segues to the third point, which is that consumer trust in the market is low. In the short term, we can try and fix that by engaging with hard-to-reach customers through trusted intermediaries, community and consumer organisations that tend to be the ones we've been recommending. But we think that rebuilding that trust has to remain a key focus for government and industry, particularly as this market transforms. Our research also has been underlining that it's not clear that anybody within the current supply chain has the incentive to deliver the sorts of services that customers are seeking. So we see two important challenges coming out of this market transformation, that as these new technologies and services are introduced, they have to be usable, they have to reduce complexity, and that means that we need to focus on interoperability, which might mean we need to talk about common standards. We also have to ensure that nobody's left behind. We think there are groups of customers, the elderly, low-income, rural and regional communities and tenants who we think are at real risk of becoming worse off because they're not going to be able to either access or perhaps afford those services. And then finally, the final critical finding was that energy is critical to household health and well-being. No amount of information or education help if people's houses leak heat and cold. Poor energy performing homes result in higher energy bills, increased mortality rates, increased incidence of diseases and higher public health spending. And we have underestimated the health impact. So what we've done to try and address those challenges is to produce two frameworks to help government and industry build those learnings into the way they do their business. And I'll just give a really quick overview of each. So the first was built on that recognition that people in LEAP reported a whole range of benefits from participation. They did, for the most part, save money on their bills, but they also came out of the trials with a lot more confidence and greater feelings of self-efficacy in relation to the market, and they also reported improved health outcomes. So we asked Asil Allen to think about an Australian framework that defines and quantifies the benefits of energy efficiency, building on the work that's been done by the IEA and informed by the data and the LEAP pilots. So Asil Allen looked at the evidence base, national and international, around those impacts, and overall came to the conclusion that energy and emission savings is actually, in fact, the lesser benefit of an energy efficiency program, that the significant savings and public benefits are around improving household health and wellbeing. Benefits for energy providers are pretty well understood. So working with consumers to manage their energy results in improved reliability, smoother peak demand, deferred generation and network investment, and reduced volatility and wholesale costs. But there are a whole range of health-related impacts that are far less well understood. Direct health impacts from improved thermal quality. There is robust evidence linking improved mental health and well-being. So helping people manage their energy bills reduces their financial stress and fear of falling into debt. And it's also integral to social and economic inclusion. People in the LEAP trials were embarrassed to invite people into their homes because they were cold and uncomfortable. And if you don't have electricity, it's really hard to work or study from home. I just wanted to talk about two things where we've been translating the research into action and building those consumer behavioural insights into government action. Given the nexus between energy, housing and health, we made housing one of the power shift priorities in the last year of the program. We saw an opportunity emerge to drive change on housing that we'd actually never seen before. Government officials were talking about housing in a new way. Energy officials were starting to talk about it as really critical to affordability. Advocacy organisations who'd been asking for better housing from their state and territory governments for years were finally seeing funding actually start to be released to housing programs and pilots. The Commonwealth was undertaking a process focused on decarbonising new homes that provided a window of opportunity to drive change. And we knew that at its December meeting, the COAG Energy Council would actually be considering some recommendations. So we developed a strategy in partnership with Renew and ACOS, who'd also been keen to drive those improved energy performance standards. We went first to the evidence base, and we asked Asil Allen to develop a short background paper based on that multiple impacts framework to make clear that the status quo was resulting in bad outcomes for customers and was more expensive for government. We built into our strategy the recommendations of a substantive report by Climate Works and ASBEC that demonstrated that improvements were achievable and affordable. Stakeholders told us that a strong consumer voice would be a game changer, so we decided our best strategy was to amplify that voice. So we convened a housing summit in September last year, where the CEOs of a number of community and consumer organisations signed a communique calling for a comprehensive national strategy. And then building on that communique, in December, a joint statement was signed by 36 consumer groups and 21 supporting agencies that urged COAG Energy Council to commit to action at its meeting at the end of last year. And in February, energy ministers agreed to that trajectory to raise energy performance standards for new housing. Now, the battle is not over yet because building ministers now have their say, but we have a coalition that will carry through and continue to have that conversation with building ministers. And then finally, I just thought I'd mention that we're in the process of developing some exemplar consumer information resources using the Supporting Households framework. We ran some workshops in four capitals and two online, and we talked to service providers in Bathurst and Cairns. And on the basis of that feedback, we've identified four groups of consumers, low-income homeowners, first-time renters, people living in Indigenous consumers living in remote communities who tend to be off the grid, and older people who are struggling to find information online or to access digital information. So we're now developing a range of information products for each of those groups that tries to answer the questions they're asking now, and will be delivered through a voice that is trusted by those consumers. So we're not going to be the primary channel for that information. It will be Financial Counselling Australia, Indigenous Consumer Assistance Network, Tenants Union and Council of the Ageing. And we're also developing a guide for policymakers to guide them through a similar process, just to demonstrate the value of using the framework. The supporting household framework's really only been out for 6 months, but the response so far has been really positive. It's been used by government in a whole range of decisions: tariff reform, the development of an energy efficiency strategy and energy efficiency policy, industries using it to think about how they can be helping customers who are facing new tariff structures. So we think there's a real potential to lean on that as a pathway, beginning to think about how you might reach customers in an effective and comprehensive way. And then finally, just to say that these messages have kind of become embedded in our advocacy. So this is our vision for the market: that better consumer outcomes rely on three principles, which is affordability — consumers are paying no more than they need — individualised, that they're able to access information and services on their terms, and optimised, which is that they are confident that the market is working in their interests, that system decisions include consumers and their assets, like their solar panels, and that they're rewarded and not punished.
This episode of Era on Air is brought to you by the Future of HVAC 2019. Where is the HVAC industry headed? How are we becoming more energy efficient? Where are the greatest opportunities for innovation? What do we, as an industry, need to prepare for? The annual Future of HVAC two-day conference comes to Brisbane this September 11th and 12th. This year's event features keynote talks on digitalization, how technology is changing the construction industry, and insights into Brisbane's $3.6 billion Queen's Wharf integrated resort development. There will also be presentations ranging between sustainable buildings to ammonia-based air conditioning systems, plus panels on innovation and entrepreneurship in HVAC, diversity, and resilient buildings. Explore the speakers, find more event information, and register to attend the Future of HVAC 2019 at era.org.au/future. After her presentation, I got to ask Kerry Connors what her main takeaway was from her talk. What was the one thing she really wanted people to go away with?
I would like them to think about what the customer they're talking to needs. One of the big lessons from our research was around the fact that customers have different needs, different preferences, and you as the supplier sometimes needs to ask them about, you know, the way they use energy, about the way they live, to actually unpackage those a little bit more. So that would be the message to ask people, just put themselves in the customer's shoes, ask a few questions about how they actually use energy, and then think about whether the product or the service they're offering them is quite right.
Has smart metering kind of done that in some way by allowing that kind of passive measurement of when and how people are using power?
It provides the platform for it. What we're not seeing as much as really you'd like are the sorts of services emerging where customers are being given, you know, data in enough time to be able to make a, you know, to make a change, to use it differently. One of my colleagues came up with a great analogy that said that, you know, electricity is like if you were driving down the highway and you didn't have a speedometer and there was no speed signs, and 3 months later you got a bill saying you were speeding. And smart meters help with that, but again, we haven't quite maybe got all the tools together to make sure the customers are using that in a way that benefits the customer rather than the retailer.
If your audience of one hypothetically was a member of the HVAC in our sector, yep, say a mechanical services engineer, What do you think they should have taken away from your talk?
I'd still say that idea of putting themselves in the customer's shoes and making sure they're delivering a solution that actually suits the customer and is tailored to the customer, and asking, and maybe it's asking the customer about the way they kind of think about whatever appliance they're installing. So if you're installing an air conditioner, you know, one of the things that's come through recently from a colleague in the Queensland Consumers Association is that they don't understand very well that the standard says run this in economy mode, but they don't actually know quite what economy mode is. And so there's that lack of transparency about what's the most effective way to use the appliance. Ask the customer about, you know, whether they understand that.
And we thank Kerry Connors for her time and talking to us, and for a great talk at the Melbourne Forum. Please join us next time for the third in this three-part series from the Melbourne Forum event, Energy Poverty, for a talk from Michelle Burton from the Latrobe Valley Home Energy Upgrade Program by Sustainability Victoria.